real estate, if you think about it, is traditionally a bricks and mortar business. And so that becomes interesting because you can have this flexible lifestyle, but within what parameters? So, you know, that's kind of challenging. Say you're a real estate agent who looks after, you know, the North Sydney area and surrounds, then what does you being a digital nomad or working from wherever mean? Because do you still need to physically turn up for inspections? Do you physically still need to meet clients face to face to have that personal interaction?
You are listening to Elevate, the official podcast of Elite Agent for real estate industry sales professionals, property managers, and leaders. Each episode, we bring you the best minds in business and real estate to help you list more, sell more, and elevate your results. To connect with all things Elite Agent, including the latest news, coaching, and features, subscribe at our website, eliteagent.com.
Welcome to another episode of the Elevate Podcast, where we delve into some of the most interesting minds in business and in real estate for the very best tips and strategies for you to implement to elevate your business. I'm Samantha McLean, editor of Elite Agent and host of this week's show. Today is a pretty special episode. I am super, super excited to present this week's guest. It is Lisa Messenger, CEO of The Messenger Group and The Collective Hub. Lisa is a well-known international speaker, best-selling author, and an authority on disruption in both the corporate sector and the startup scene. We all watched in awe the rise of the Collective Hub, and today we're going to talk about some of the lessons she's learned as an entrepreneur through unpacking her most recent books, Risk and Resilience, and her latest book, Work From Wherever. We talk about how she became resilient enough to weather the storm of both making and breaking her own brand. And we're also going to talk about building a brand while on the move. So if you are a real estate agent, it's a sign of what's to come, where more and more consumers will perhaps be looking towards flexible accommodation rather than permanent homes. I hope you enjoyed the episode, and if you do, please share it with your industry colleagues, and of course hit that iTunes subscribe button. For show notes and links to this episode, please visit our website, eliteagent.com/elevate. Now, if you want to work from wherever, remember that every great business is built on great processes. And this week's sponsor, again, is Process Street, a simple and powerful way to manage your team's recurring checklists and procedures, whether they happen to be on the road or in the office. For more information about Process Street and some ready-made checklists for real estate agents, please also visit the show notes for this episode on our website. I hope you enjoy the episode. On with the show. All right, so welcome to the podcast, Lisa Messenger.
Thank you. It is good to be here. We have much to talk about.
I know, just a couple of editors shooting the breeze.
I know, which I love. I could actually spend an entire week here probably.
I know. And I've got so many questions to ask you, and I'm sure that our listeners are going to be so excited to hear from you because everybody knows you from your various books and from the Collective Hub, and I'm sure lots of people in our audience have bought your magazine. I personally loved your magazine.
Thank you.
So just give us a quick run through the last 12 months or so. What have you been up to with The Collective and Lisa Messenger and all of those wonderful things?
Oh, do I need to go back a little to go forward?
If you like.
How far back to my days of being a real estate agent? No, we'll cover that later.
I did read that about you somewhere.
So, yeah, the last 12 months, gosh. Well, April 2018, I decided to break the very thing that I loved more than pretty much anything on the planet, which was my print magazine, Collective Hub, which I started in March 2013. And that whole story is certainly something about anything is possible because I started it in March 2013, never having worked for a magazine, going into a highly saturated industry. I think there was 5,500 print mags or something like that in Australia alone at the time. And yeah, so I had no money, no idea what I was doing, going into a highly saturated industry that people said was dead or dying. But within 18 months, the print magazine was in 37 countries. And I had people like Anna Wintour, many of you will know from The Devil Wears Prada and the September issue, inviting me to go and meet with her in New York. So Collective Hub became huge and extraordinary, and I'd had businesses for 11 years before and overserviced and undercharged and was everything to everyone, and finally something worked. Until it didn't. The last 12 months, I basically decided to break everything in terms of cut the guts out of my cost base, decentralize my team and work from wherever, which is what the title of my latest book is. So we can talk about why I did that, and really bigger isn't necessarily better. And it's very easy to add a lot of, you know, heads into a team and think that that is the answer to growth and success. But in actual fact, what I've learned is it's quite the contrary. So maybe we can talk a little about all of those decisions.
Excellent. I was hoping we could talk about both, like your current book, which is Work From Wherever, and also the book before it, which is Risk and Resilience.
Yeah.
So I've read Risk and Resilience, and I've also read the one before that, which I think was Money and Mindfulness. And there's just such great value in all of them. And Work From Wherever, I've read the first chapter, but not all of it because it's not quite out yet, is it?
No, I think mid-August it's officially out, but I bought a few copies today, so I don't know. And I can give you some more if you want to do some giveaways to any of your customers and community.
I'm sure they would love that. And don't worry, I'll be onto that one tonight. Because it's kind of like Work From Wherever, I see, is a bit of a sequel to Risk and Resilience, isn't it? Because you talked about the breaking of your brand and turning it into something else. And then Work From Wherever is a bit of a sequel to that, because I remember way back in another book, you felt like you needed to have an office.
Yeah.
Or you had an office for 16 and a half years, which was what you felt like you needed to run a successful publishing company or a successful business.
Mm.
But now down the track, you've completely pivoted on that. So tell me a little bit about that.
So much. And yes, the reason for anyone listening who doesn't know, I've become a prolific book writer, author. I still feel weird saying I'm an author. Anyway, I did what was unceremoniously called veggie English at school, which was for the lowest of the low who couldn't write. And I mean, the last 5.5 years, I've written 7 books.
Yep.
Just really charting the journey, because my mandate is to be an entrepreneur for entrepreneurs, living my life out loud and showing that anything's possible. Okay, so let's jump into those 2 books. So basically, yeah, when I started my first business, it was 22nd of October 2001. So that is nearly 18 years ago. And it's funny because we start a business for freedom and choice and to, you know, run our own race and all of those kind of things.
Mm-hmm.
And yet, for 16 and a half years, approximately, I had a bricks and mortar business. And even for the first 11 years, I only had 3 staff members. Like, I couldn't work out how to scale the business. But the model of success, I think, in society often is around, you know, having an office, or how big is your office, and having a team, and how big is your team. And for years, I'd, you know, try and have the swankiest office, and I'd almost be embarrassed when people would say, how many are in your team? And I'd kind of like sheepishly say, 3. And what I've learned now is that, in fact, is the best way to run a business, like to be lean. And I'll tell you a little bit about that. So Collective Hub, about a couple of years in, I had 32 full-time staff and over $3 million in fixed salaries. Now, interestingly enough, and an office that cost nearly 300 grand. There were a lot of 3s in there, and everything seemed to suddenly be in multiples of 100,000.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it was kind of scary. And what's interesting about that is the majority of my team were still outside of that 32. So within the 32, even though I was essentially a publishing company and a media business, only 3 of them were writers or commissioning articles. But all of my writers were freelance. They've always been freelance. So it was like, if I wanted an article written in Berlin on tech, I had someone there. If I wanted something on fashion in New York, I had someone there. So I always had these specialists that were decentralized. And in fact, even my editor of the entire magazine, Amy, was not a full-time staff member, and she was working from Kiama, so 2.5 hours south of Sydney, and running pretty much the whole magazine from there. My bookkeeper, Kate, has lived in the Blue Mountains. My IT guy, Kevin, has always been external to the team. My logistics and distribution person, Jody, has always lived in Mossman in Sydney. So Jody's been with me 7 years, Kevin and Kate 12 years, I think. So all these people weren't actually part of my 32 full-time staff members. And I started to think, this is crazy, particularly when business, including the real estate industry, it moves, morphs, pivots, iterates at such a rapid change that the people you hire and put on a full-time salary one day, unfortunately, might not have the skill set to carry through, you know, 3 months down the track or even a month down the track these days. So basically, I decided to let everyone turn into freelancers, consultants. And, you know, we've been writing articles on digital nomads and, you know, flexible workplaces and working from wherever for such a long time. I was like, well, why don't I actually make this a dream for my team? Then they can work for other people. And now everything's based on output rather than bums on seats and time in office. And so I've found that it's working really, really well. Some people work enormously well at 3:59 a.m., like my boyfriend, crazy.
Yep.
And other people, you know, want to have flexibility to pick their kids up. Other people want to be able to travel and work. So, yeah, it's become a very data-driven business because there needs to be a lot of reporting and accountability, but there's also a lot of freedom and flexibility.
Yeah, that's awesome. And, you know, like, I guess what you're saying there is very much how we run our business here now is that, you know, we've got some great freelancers who work in all states of Australia, but they work on their terms. They've all got kids. They work on their terms. And it's actually been better for us than having full-time staff.
Yeah, it's amazing. Here. And I mean, I would probably commend the real estate industry to an extent because I guess for a long time, people have had a certain amount of flexibility and have worked on commissions. And so however much effort you put in, you are rewarded and all sorts of things. So certainly there's some things that the real estate industry have been early adopters in. But yeah, there's also a little opportunity for disruption, I think.
Yeah, I think they could go even further. Like, I mean, now's an interesting time in real estate because there's, I think, roughly 25% less new listings coming to market right now.
Wow.
And so the size of the pie has shrunk. Mm. And I guess there's a lot of prop tech disruptors eyeing the real estate industry. We're continually hearing Uber of real estate. Well, not so much anymore because everyone got sick of that Uber word. But having been through such a massive change yourself, what is a message that you'd like to give business owners or real estate business owners who are not that great with change?
So I think the biggest thing is, and this goes back to 2013 when I started Collective Hub, I think the most important thing is to know what you stand for and know what your vision is. So Collective Hub, for example, is three words, igniting human potential. That's as complex or as simple as the business gets. And so as a real estate agent, I think work out what are you trying to do? What's the feeling you're trying to give people? Almost remove the transactional piece and kind of go, what is that? Like, is it to make people's lives happier or more fulfilled? I don't know. Whatever the thing is, remove the transactional piece. And then the second piece of that is be fluid in the delivery mechanism because everything changes. And what I mean by that, and I don't know the industry intimately, although I play around a little bit in investment properties and some cosmetic renos and things. I love all of that. And I've used buyer's agents and bought and sold and all sorts of things. I think the thing about it is if you're just working on a transactional basis, like I'm a real estate agent, I take a listing, I sell it, I make a commission, then that's quite one-dimensional in this day and age. But if you start to think about what's my passion, what's my vision, what's my mission, what's my purpose, what do I stand for, what are my belief systems, and remove the immediate commercial reality, then potentially there's other opportunities like making a podcast or, you know, I don't like all sorts of different things from an educational perspective or different ways of doing things or building an app that services the industry in another way. So look at different delivery mechanisms. It's like when I started Collective Hub as a print magazine, I didn't know how long print would be around for, as people said, it would be dead or dying. And I mean, I'm still so passionate about it. But quickly, I iterated into, well, if our mission is about igniting human potential, we can create a print magazine. I can run events that are educational and inspirational. I can create a digital platform that has short form articles. You know, I can write books. I can do speaking gigs. I can run workshops. So, you know, there are many ways to slice and dice these days. And I think that's where life becomes exciting because if you're doing the same thing day in and day out and the industry is shifting and the consumer or the customer is changing the way that they buy and sell, then you need to be open and adaptable and flexible and to be able to move with that change and be unafraid of it, I think. And that's where I would say the real estate industry is one of the most exciting industries out there because a lot of people think when they start a new business or they go into something that they need to invent something completely different. But when an industry is highly saturated, I mean, everyone needs to buy, sell, rent. You know, everyone's moving in the property market all the time. So I think it's one of the most exciting opportunities and industries out there because there's so much, you know, so much opportunity. Yeah.
Yeah. I think there's a new study out on just moving costs alone. And I think for some people are actually looking at, well, what can I do around the actual transaction of moving homes?
Yeah.
And I'm sure that someone like you would think of about 10 different ideas, you know, off the top of your head.
Yeah. I mean, I can riff about a few things right now. I mean, I'm in the middle of a few different things. So I have a investment property in Bondi that I bought 9 years ago. And, you know, there's opportunities there when you think differently. When I bought it, someone said to me, it's going to cost $83,000 to renovate it. And I just thought laterally, and I was like, I'd never renovated a property at the time. And I looked in the kitchen, there were 22 cupboards, and I was like, surely I can just use the existing cabinetry and get new cupboard doors made. And I think it cost me $1,100 in total, and it looked like a brand new kitchen. And I bought things from appliances online or not, anyway, and just basically did this whole kitchen for like $3,000 or something and re-enameled the bath and, you know, so lots of little cosmetic things. We're actually moving out of our house in Darlinghurst at the moment. So I've got a woman coming on Thursday to do the pack up, you know, $50 an hour, two people, so $100 an hour. Like there's so many different opportunities, people who style your house. I mean, I love the industry. There's so many different facets to it rather than the just transactional thing. So yeah, I think online, offline, tech opportunities, like there's endless. And I actually love it. I love the whole industry.
Yeah, it is a really exciting industry at the moment. I mean, the trouble with real estate too is I think still like real estate agents need to be very resilient because I think to be successful in real estate, you've got to be a really good communicator.
Yes.
And also, I think it was something that you spoke about on Instagram a couple of weeks ago, is that you need to be resilient. You need to feel the fear, I guess, and do it anyway.
Yeah.
And that can apply to something like knocking on someone's door.
Yes.
Or picking up the phone.
Yeah.
Like, you know, some people just don't like picking up the phone when our careers depend on it.
Yeah.
What is your advice, just something simple, to become more resilient or to feel less fear in an industry that has been constantly threatened by disruptors?
I think the thing is, for me, it always comes back to human connection. And, you know, good real estate agents do that well. Bad real estate agents do it really badly.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so if you just, again, wind it back to what do I stand for? Why am I doing what I do? And then just really feeling into that. I know that sounds a bit woo-woo.
And then going, we like woo-woo in this industry. There's a lot of woo-woo in.
Yeah. And then going, I'm a good person and I genuinely want someone to find an amazing property, or I genuinely want someone to get a great price for their property, or whatever it is that you, why are you really doing this? You know what I mean? And then I think it enables you to remove that fear, because rather than coming at it thinking I'm selling to someone and am I worthy or gosh, I'm being a pain, it's like, actually, no, I'm really genuinely offering something amazing to someone and I'm really helping them to change their life. Because, you know, as a consumer, having bought and sold properties and, you know, used various other services, all of that is daunting. And if someone literally can come to me and say, like this woman I'm using to pack up my boxes,
yeah,
she's like, it doesn't matter. Like I walked her through 10 minutes, you know, room by room. Not a problem. It'll take us 4 hours. This is what we'll do. And I'm like, oh, for that service, I don't care how much it costs. I will pay anything.
Shut up because, and take my money.
Yeah, because suddenly she's like really filling something that's kind of freaking me out because I'm a busy person and I'm not detail orientated. I'm terrible at detail. So yeah, the thought of me having to do that. So I think stop doing the hard sell and saying, we can get you this much for your property. This is what the neighbor sold for or whatever else. Like, just solve a problem for me. Like, that is the easiest thing, because once you're doing that and you're coming at it from a humanistic approach, people will buy anything from you. Like, seriously. And that'll make people stand out, I think, you know? So,
yeah. So to summarize, think about what your real mission is and develop services around that. That might not just be the transaction. It might be a whole bunch of other things around that.
So well put. And the other thing about that is that, I mean, you want to have precision focus because, you know, as soon as you start being everything to everyone, it's not a commercially great decision, but also allow yourself to diversify. I think that's important. And, you know, test little things on the side maybe and start to think, A, does that excite me? Do I feel alive when I do that? Is there a market for that? And, you know, is it commercially viable? I think there are three things to think about when you're testing a different business stream. You know, don't go all in necessarily, yeah. but test slowly, iterate, and then think, gosh, actually, that excites me way more than what I'm doing currently. And it might give you an opportunity to branch out into something different, a different revenue stream, a different way of thinking, a different service.
Yeah. And then using work from wherever as a bit of an inspiration, you could surround yourself with a team of people that aren't necessarily in your office to do those various things.
And that is the beautiful thing, you know, using freelancers and contractors as opposed to necessarily, you know, a full-time staff, it means that you can bring in specialists as and when you need them and pay them on a project-by-project basis. And you can set up specific KPIs, key performance indicators, and deliverables. And I kind of love that. So, you know, I might say to someone, okay, for this piece of work, it's $2,000. This is my expectation. This is, you know, what I want the data to look like, or the financials, or whatever their output and deliverables are. Wow, you smashed that. Here's another piece of work.
Yeah.
Rather than paying someone a $60,000 salary or $150,000 or whatever it happens to be, the price is irrelevant. It's a really nice way to bring in specialists and surround yourself with those. And there's a number of different, you know, aspects in the real estate industry that could be utilizing different services, I think.
Yeah, absolutely. Now, you just referred to it a little bit before, is that real estate agents are responsible for their own income. So, yeah. you know, like however much they earn, they have to be kind of accountable really yeah. to no one other than themselves. So let's talk work from wherever at the moment. What yeah. does a typical day for you look like? How do you keep yourself accountable to delivering so many books and delivering what you need to for the Collective Hub and things like that?
Many people listening to this will relate, because I think, you know, you go from a full-time office where you turn up to work at 8, 9, whatever it is, mm-hmm. but you have a sense of purpose every day. You get your coffee, you go to the gym, whatever it is, you walk into the office and there's people waiting there for you. Suddenly, not having a full-time office and being on the road, as so many real estate agents are, you've got to have so much discipline and rituals and routines to support that way of being. So I think that's something that's really, really important, because I think so many people glorify, oh, I want to be able to, you know, yep. swing in a hammock and work from wherever, or I'd love to work from home or work on the road and have that flexibility. But you've got to put, you know, certain things in place so that you don't just get up at 10, yep. open the fridge 20 times looking for a snack, procrastinate. So, yeah, I think that's what has been interesting. So my typical day, I don't have one, because – interestingly, now I have still Collective Hub, which, you know, does a certain amount of things. I do a lot of speaking gigs. I write books. I've got two startups happening. And the beautiful thing about that is, so far, the productivity of my teams is like unsurpassing anything I've ever experienced. And the reason is this: when I had a full-time office, and you'll relate to this in a way, when I was putting a magazine together, I'd feel like I would have 32 people gathered around the desk looking at the cover and having their input. It really took probably two people that were needed. And we had a lot of meetings for meeting's sake. But now my Collective Hub team is completely separate to my other startup teams. So, yeah, one is in the fashion industry, something I've never done before, just because I want to disrupt
awesome.
Again.
Yeah.
But the nice thing is that if my Collective Hub team knew, I mean, they kind of know I'm doing other things, but, you know, people always get excited by bright, shiny things. So if they knew that was happening, they'd be like, oh my gosh, I want to design that. So I've been able to keep the teams very focused and, you know, working specifically on what their skill sets are. And so far, so good. And we use tools like Slack and Asana. Asana's great. I don't know if you guys use it, but we have all my team are in there with their tasks and to-do lists and when they're due and all that kind of thing. So I can click on it at any time and think, Helen, why haven't you done that? Or yeah. Tegan, why haven't you done that? Or yeah.
We use Monday and
yes,
in a
very similar
Process Street. Yeah.
Yeah.
I love ticking those green boxes on Monday like you wouldn't believe.
I love it too. And that takes adaptability, because when I did have a lot of staff around me, I mentioned before, I'm not a detail person. So I had people doing a lot of stuff for me, and suddenly, you know, it took a little bit of adjusting to be out on my own, because I'm not that technologically savvy. So like my boyfriend jumped onto my computer on the weekend and logged me out of my Google Docs and went into his own. And then I'm like, oh my God, my passwords. Yep. And so you've got to be sort of more fastidious about detail. And, you know, yeah, technology can be slightly prohibitive to have to relearn things to support this, you know, work from wherever lifestyle.
Yeah. So make sure you've got solid processes in the office and you can actually see what everyone's doing at any given point in time, and that they're clear rather on when they've got to deliver something back to you.
Yeah, 100%. And that can, I mean, this will be different in the real estate industry, but just to give you a couple of examples, my graphic designers for the magazine, which we're doing one or two issues a year, and my books and, you know, other bits and pieces, they're all on a project fee, but their deliverables are, you need to produce me a magazine or you need to produce me a book. Helen, my digital marketing manager, is on an hourly rate, but it's all dependent on KPIs. So every single day I have dashboards of how many people have bought our products online, what's our engagement on Instagram. Like every single digital metric is fed to me on a daily basis. So I can see in real time, you know, are people performing at a quick glance? And yeah, it's very data driven, but I think that's an absolute imperative. And so many people in business, you know, love being creative, don't necessarily love the data, but I have certainly learned to be intimate with every aspect of your data. So, yeah.
That's a good lesson for leaders, isn't it? Even if you are the great salesperson, which a lot of people in the real estate industry do, is they're great at sales and decide they want to be in their own business. And then, I mean, this business here works because I'm creative and, and the other guy in there, my husband, he's actually the numbers guy. And I think you'd agree with that too, wouldn't you? Is that you need to find people that complement you rather than more of the same.
100%. I always say hire your weaknesses. So, you know, get really honest about what you're not great at. As I said, I am terrible at detail and operationally, I don't really love it. The HR, the IT, you know, financials, legals, I don't love. But I have also learned, and this is where I made a big mistake with Collective Hub, was I hired a bunch of big heavy hitters, expensive heads around me to take care of some of the things, and I removed myself and put too much trust in them. And what I've learned is we've got to be almost the brand architect. Like you've got to have at least a top level understanding of how it all functions. Otherwise, you know, it can go south very quickly.
Yeah, completely agree. So let's go back to work from wherever at the moment. I'm a little obsessed with this because I had a bit of a taste of working from wherever last year. I worked in, actually it was earlier this year, I worked in Singapore for a while. Nobody knew I was there.
Ah, amazing.
But it was really good. And the tools that you get to allow you to do this are amazing now. So that's, technology is not a barrier anymore. It's not going away, is it? Like there are going to be more and more people like you and I out there who are going to want to work from wherever, and whether they're working for a real estate business or a publisher or any sort of business. I mean, PwC, I used to work for PwC, by the way, and it used to be there that you used to have to be in there very early in the morning and you would leave late at night and people would notice when,
when you
came and went. And you talk about the difference between trends and fads. So this is not a fad. So this is a trend. So define what you mean by this trend moving forward.
Yeah, well, I mean, many people will relate to this. When I started my business in 2001 and probably until almost 3 years ago or so, you know, everyone came to work at 8 o'clock or whatever, let's call it 8 till 6, 9 to 5, whatever you want to call it. And everyone generally had one job. And, you know, there was an expectation that you wouldn't have a side hustle or you wouldn't be working for someone else outside of there. And your pound of flesh was mine. And, you know, how could you possibly have time to do extra work, you know, after hours? Because if you're passionate about your job, you just keep working.
Yeah.
And prior to that, I mean, if you think about our parents and our grandparents' generation, I mean, people worked in one job for their whole life pretty much. Yep. And that was it. And often it was handed down from generation to generation. And more recently, what we've seen, I mean, we've gone through co-working spaces that used to be kind of almost a foreign concept. And there's so many different franchises all over the world of co-working spaces. There's big things like Soho House that have sprung up all over the world, which enables you to travel and work. And so this trend goes through really everything from solopreneurs, people working on their own, through to entrepreneurs, people like you and I who have, and a lot of real estate agents who have our own businesses, right through to corporates, as you mentioned. And PwC is a very good example. I think it's something like, I'm ad-libbing a bit, but don't they have like 1,000 people to 300 desks,
something
like that?
Yeah.
And, you know, that can be very disconcerting to a lot of people who have worked for corporates and are used to the bureaucracy and the regimented day and kind of knowing what to do, when to do it. And suddenly they have this decentralized desk system and, you know, they're at a different desk every day. So it is interesting and people need to adapt, but absolutely. I mean, you look at millennials and they move through jobs every year or 18 months or something now, and they want to try everything. They all want to have their own businesses straight out of university. I know since starting Collective Hub, which is all about, you know, being entrepreneurs, people always ask me across every single platform conceivable, how do I have a side hustle? How do I jump? How do I make the leap? So, you know, people might be working, you know, 9 to 5 in a corporate job, but maybe they're, working in at one of the big four or something, but on the side, they've got a fashion business or they're, you know, doing a multitude of other things and testing things, you know, and then there's this whole thing about, you know, flexible work life, you know, about people with families and all of that kind of thing. And so I think we really can't escape it. And it really makes a lot of sense. It takes a long time to get your head around it. I can talk from experience. I remember when one of my team said to me on a full-time salary about maybe 4 years ago, can I go traveling for 4 months and still stay on my 80 grand salary?
Yeah.
And I looked at her like, have you got 2 heads? Like, are you serious? Like, how dare you? And then eventually I worked out with her. She was one of my amazing writers. And I was like, well, if you can deliver me, you know, every week this many articles and, you know, very specific output. And I tell you what, she went through South America and I've never had such good writing and such extraordinary output and deliverables and productivity. And so that kind of changed my thinking. But I do remember at the time thinking, my gosh, what? You know, like, this is crazy. So it does take quite a mindset shift, I think, from leaders and business owners to kind of allow that flexibility and change the mindset from, I just need your bums on seats and I need to see what you're doing and I want to watch you like a hawk all day, to like, okay, I'll let you fly. And a way to do that is just to test, I think, and say to someone, okay, why don't you start working from home one day a week and let's see what your output is? Or, okay, why don't you come in at 6 a.m. and leave at 2 p.m. or whatever it is, because you want to pick your kids up from school, and let's test that. And I think just try and have faith in people. And if they don't perform, then you can rein them in quite quickly.
Yeah.
And the flip side of that is people working for someone else to suddenly realize, don't kind of go, woohoo, I've got all this freedom. It's like, well, you actually have to deliver. Like, if a business is good enough to consider, you know, what are your personal vision, your personal values, you know, what are the things that you want to do in your life and will support you to do it, then don't take the piss.
yeah, absolutely. You know, it's a privilege.
Yeah.
By the same token, you know, to be an attraction business these days, you really need to be thinking along those lines to allow people to do that sort of thing. But I think there's another challenge for real estate agents in that more people working from home or more people wanting to work on the road, call them digital nomads or call them, you know, there's various other names, aren't there?
Yeah. No. There's quite a few.
digital nomads is the one that's most common. I see a need for changed homes.
Yes. And also it's interesting because real estate, if you think about it, is traditionally a bricks and mortar business. And so that becomes interesting because you can have this flexible lifestyle, but within what parameters? So, you know, that's kind of challenging. Say you're, well, where are we today? North Sydney. Say you're a real estate agent who looks after, you know, the North Sydney area and surrounds, then what does you being a digital nomad or working from wherever mean? Because do you still need to physically turn up for inspections? Do you physically still need to meet clients face to face to have that personal interaction? And so that's where it becomes kind of interesting to challenge what we discussed before, is about rethinking the parameters of how you work. You know, can you utilize Skype or Zoom or other ways to actually connect with your clients so you remove so much of the need for that? I don't know yet how you go and open a house without physically being there, but certainly with technologies and, you know, being able to do video tours or, like, there's so many different things that you can do. Physically removing yourself completely and working in Spain for a month whilst your clients are in North Sydney, I'm not sure.
Yeah.
But that's where you can rethink, you know, are there other ways that you can work and service the industry and fulfill your own dreams and missions so that you can actually travel for some time if you want. Yeah, so that's that thing. But yes, it's interesting what you said about where's the industry going? And you handed me an article as I walked in. What does it say? For $2,500 a month, you can gain access to 60,000 luxury homes around the world, which is an interesting concept in terms of, do we actually even need our own home, or do we actually start to have a much more flexible living arrangement and lifestyle as well, which becomes very attractive. So, yeah.
I think so too. And I think there are also, if we're going to sort of go to extremes, because we're both creative people, so bear with me
and
for
we
a
love
moment.
No, go. I love it.
You know, recently in Sydney, there was that Dirty Dancing, the immersive experience that got rained out. I was going to take my 17-year-old to it, and she was really looking forward, where, you know, you could actually be in the Catskills. And, you know, like, I sort of think maybe in the future, like, if we're going to be nomadic, then we're going to want an experience where we live as well. Like, we might want to live, like, how did they live in the 1960s, or how did they live in...
Oh, I love that.
How did Don Draper really live in Mad Men?
Yeah.
And just go from experience to experience in housing. I imagine you could charge a great premium for setting up a house like Patrick Swayze from Dirty Dancing, but...
Stop it, because now I'm like, we need to do this together.
I think we do, but I reckon it's a great idea, but then I think all of my ideas are great ideas. I've got to sometimes put a lid on them. But let me ask you, as one of the most creative minds I think we've got in this country, if you were going to start a real estate business now, what would you do?
Oh, okay. You're putting me totally on the spot. What would I do? Do you know, I feel like we need to do a whole other episode on that. What would I do?
I feel like we do too.
So I would start with, what am I passionate about? That's where I would start. And I would go, legitimately, I freaking love real estate. Like, I love buying properties. I love cosmetic renovations. Like, I love so many aspects of it. So I'd kind of start with what juices me up, what makes me excited, what makes me want to jump out of bed every day. I think that's the best place to start. And then I'd look at, what do people want out there? Like, what as a consumer, and I've been on that side as well, like, what do I really want? And I'd start to marry those two up. And then I probably wouldn't look at the existing real estate industry, because it's like when I started a magazine, I didn't look at a single other magazine. I took inspiration from outside of the industry, and I think that's one of the most clever things you can do, and it's also quite counterintuitive. So, for example, with Collective Hub, it's essentially looks like a design and fashion magazine, but it's a magazine for entrepreneurs. So, yeah, I'd probably look at, what are other people doing outside of real estate, and then start to apply some of those things. And I'd start to look at different apps and technology and explore, well, which one of those could overlay my passion and where there's a gap in the market. Then I'd probably look at, like, the bricks and mortar and what exists already. Yeah, but I love your idea. So start to think outside and go, what is something really creative? What can differentiate us? Where's there a hunger? Where are the trends? I mean, Airbnb is a great trend, but what you're talking about just, like, takes that to a whole new level.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I've never said that out loud before, by the way.
It's amazing. But that's the kind of thinking we need. And I think for anyone listening, that's when I get excited about business, because it's not very exciting if you just go to work every day and you go, I'm just trying to sell some stuff and I'm just trying to hit my budget, and it's very transactional. And I'm going to go door knock and I'm going to drop leaflets off. And God, I hope I can, you know, make budget this month. Like, that's not that exciting. But if you start going, what am I passionate about? What does the market want? Where's the intersection commercially? And then start to look at what people are doing in other industries, then it's really, really exciting. But now you've set me a challenge. So I am going to actually come back to you with a proper plan, and then maybe one of your listeners can implement it.
Awesome. Awesome. So just generally, like, you're a best-selling author, and I've seen on the Collective Hub that you encourage reading a lot. Binge reading. Was it binge reading? We encourage binge reading. So I'm interested to know what people or books have had the most influence on your growth.
So, yeah, binge reading is an interesting turn of phrase, because it's interesting now we consume media and books and everything at such a rapid pace. I mean, again, talking about changing economies and ways we work, I think the way that we consume information has also changed massively. I mean, we used to sit down and read a book cover to cover. I now tend to dip in and out of, like, 8 books on the go at a time. And then you're kind of scrolling through the web for different news feeds and things, and then listening to different podcasts. And, you know, we consume a lot. It can be really overwhelming. Don't even throw our own social media.
Yep.
Some of the things that have had the most profound impact on me, I think, let's see. Well, recently, I think Phil Knight's book, Shoe Dog, is fabulous. Richard Branson's books, I've been fortunate enough to spend a lot of time with him. He's had a big impact on me and taught me a lot of lessons personally. I listen to a lot of Tim Ferriss's podcasts and also a podcast called How I Built This, which is often goes into the story of businesses that kind of failed, like Airbnb and its first iteration and how that failed. Because I think we often just see the overnight success, but actually that's been a lot of years in the making. Yeah, I mean, I consume a lot of different things.
Yeah, absolutely. So what about the next 12 months? Are you a goal setter?
Not really. I'll tell you why. Because this is going to sound counterintuitive as well to a lot of people. A lot of people will say, you know, this is my 12-month goal, my 5-year goal, my 10-year goal. I don't often do that. I start with like what my why is, which, as I said, for Collective Hub is to ignite human potential. For me personally, it's to be an entrepreneur for entrepreneurs, living my life out loud, showing that anything's possible. So that is really as simple or as complex as my life gets. And it's nice to have something. And I would really encourage real estate agents and everyone listening to just think about, what is your thing? How can you simplify it into one sentence? And what do you stand for? Because from there, it gives me a really strong litmus test to be open to opportunities. And, you know, that's the thing. Once you kind of step into your purpose, these extraordinary opportunities start to present themselves. And knowing what I stand for personally, like when things come at me, I can very easily go, because, you know,
it's a good filter.
People like you and I get excited about a lot of things, but this becomes a filter because I go, ah, does that ignite human potential? Not really. Okay, move on. Yeah. Does that help me basically be a conduit to live my life out loud and show other people? Not really. Okay, so knock those things on the head. The reason I say I don't set long-term goals is that I think for me it is limiting, because I don't know, you and I could very well end this podcast, go outside, have a conversation for half an hour and be like, oh my God, we need to do that together. And so I like to be relatively fluid in how I live my life. And, you know, I just think there's so much opportunity out there and so many exciting things. And I just want to live every bit of it and, you know, soak it all up. I don't want to have a very specific life that is prescribed in front of me. You know, there are certain things around property. I might say, well, yes, we want to buy a very nice house in Bondi by March next year. So I have certain things like that. Mm. And I have certain things around certain businesses. But yeah, I want to be kind of fluid.
Yeah.
I do, though, every single day I draw mind maps, like every single day. So even though I'm quite digital now, I always have a big blank notepad in front of me and I'm always drawing circles, and in the middle of it, it's like whatever the thing is, and then I'll have all these branches coming off it. So I'm always kind of mind mapping and kind of visioning, and I'm very clear on kind of the intention, but how that actually manifests and plays out and what form it takes, I kind of detach from the outcome and surrender to an extent. Does that make sense?
Yeah, absolutely. That's really interesting actually, because I mean, I start my day with a journal too. My whole background is technology.
Yeah.
Not real estate. But I'm adamant, and I tell anyone who'll listen that, you know, like you actually have to start your day with one thing on paper, writing it down, whether you're a writing kind of person like us or not.
Yeah. I'm always scribbling everything, ideas, and so I'm very clear, but I often don't know how that's actually going to manifest. And I think that's probably one of the most important things I can say. When you're clear on your why and your purpose, then the how kind of just seems to take care of itself. And I think so many people try and control, and I mean, just test that, you know, rather than going, I just need to make this much money, or I just need to do this, just go, this is what I believe in. This is what I stand for. I don't really, it's not mine to own exactly how it's going to happen. And it's quite extraordinary when you get really clear on that upfront piece, that the serendipity and the synchronicity and what starts to unfold kind of blows my mind.
That's what's actually amazing about you, I think, is that you've had the courage to think about what your why is and step into that with complete belief and trust that that's going to happen. What would you say to convince people that sort of think, oh, look, I really need to just go and worry about my next listing rather than worrying about this big picture stuff?
Yeah, and that's the thing, isn't it? But when you do that, in my experience, and I can only talk from my experience, is we get so caught up in that and it becomes quite myopic and insular and you're worrying about the minutiae that you can't see the wood for the trees or you're working in the business, not on the business, you know, all those cliches. So it's almost like just allow yourself the time and space to just step away a little bit and go, because, you know, I did it for the last 18 months of Collective Hub. I was in survival mode. So every day it became about, I mentioned the figure 100 grand before. I mean, literally there's not a day that went by that my CFO, chief financial officer, didn't say to me, we need another 100 grand today. We need another 100 grand today.
Yeah.
It was a horrible, horrible, horrible place to be. And so I had to go into survival mode. I'm good at coming up with ideas and making money, but every day I was like, oh my gosh, should we run another event? You know, should we put on another digital masterclass? Shall I quickly write another book and pre-sell? Oh, shall I sell some more advertising? And every day, so the parallel I'm drawing is about making another listing, I was so bogged down in the stuff and the survival mode that I actually couldn't think how to grow Collective Hub anymore because I was so bogged down in just surviving. And so that's when I made the courageous decision to say, I just need to cut the guts out of the cost base because at the moment I do not have the time and space to actually see how to make this business work because I'm just having to make the bills and pay everyone's salaries and I'm just treading water, you know, and it was horrible. And so that's the thing. Stay as lean as you possibly can, I think. And by lean, I don't mean your physical body, although that could be good too.
It could be, yeah.
I mean, keep your cost base low, you know, keep your full-time team low, keep your ridiculous things that you don't think about. Like I had a 5-year contract with a photocopier printer, like a machine in the office that was, I don't even know, 13 grand a month. It's like ridiculous.
Yes, yep, yep.
And it's like, don't sign long-term contracts because that way, when you need a bit of a break and you need to say, I actually just need to go and rethink the way I'm doing things. I just need to take a week off or a month off or whatever it is. You've got some runway in there and you're not just having to react and respond and be in survival mode and make the next paycheck. I think that's one of the most important things because you don't have that luxury when you've got all these fixed expenses that you just have to do, you know?
Yeah. So to deal with changing times, let's say stay nimble, stay lean.
Yeah.
Keep looking at the big picture, focus on your mission.
Yeah, 100%. Yeah. And that's one thing that I've really changed. I want everything to be much more project to project. And then it's quite an exciting way to live life as well because it's like this has presented itself. Wow, yeah. I really love that. That excites me. Yeah, let's work on that. Let's see if it can happen. And then put systems and processes in place so that I can automate it to a degree so I'm not stuck in it. Always. Yeah. Because for any of us doing the same thing day in and day out and having to, I don't know, make X amount of money to survive, it's not a fun place to be at all.
Yeah, absolutely. So, Lisa, you've been so generous with your knowledge and your experiences and from everything that you've written in all of your books, which I'd recommend that everyone should pick them up, frankly.
Thank you. Start with Daring and Disruptive, maybe.
Yeah.
Charted the first 18 months of Collective Hub. Yeah.
Yeah. But so many value bombs in all of them, and there's been so many today as well. So if there was one thing that you'd like people to remember from this chat that you and I have had, which could go on all day, what would it be?
The one thing would be get really clear on your purpose. You know, I can't express that enough because the thing is we just go along and go along and live life according to other people's expectations or what we think society expects of us or, you know, I've got a bigger car or whatever than you. And I think just wind it back and go, what really makes you happy, you know? And then business should start from there. I think that it's as simple as that because once you land there, every day becomes a joy and it's not like work and it's not about money for money's sake. It finds a way to come to you, I think.
Absolutely. Lisa Messenger, thank you so much.
Thank you so much.
To connect with all things Elite Agent, including the latest news, coaching and features, subscribe at our website, eliteagent.com.